You have tuned in to Lifelines on KISL 88.7 FM in Avalon. You are about to hear an encore presentation called Be Prepared, program number 33, originally aired on January 27, 2013, featuring the music of Affirmative Action, Lawsuit, The Preoccupied Pipers, and Bossa 5-0, and an interview with musician Joe Hayes. Tune in next Monday at 11:30 for a new episode of Lifelines.
If I had a boat, I'd go out on the ocean. And if I had a pony, I'd ride him on my boat. And we could all together go out on the ocean, set me up on my pony, on my boat.
Hey y'all, it's Cynthia Seashell, aka the Liveaboard, for more Lifelines. And I have a very exciting show today. This is the show normally about what it's like to live full-time on a boat and in Avalon in general, plus a few special guests thrown in for fun, and mostly today is the special guest for fun. We will do a little bit of topic, and for that I will give us a little background music, and we'll see what happens. The topic is, what does it mean to be prepared? Mm-hmm. For what do we prepare? Is it just wishful thinking that we could ever be prepared for anything? That's our scintillating topic of the day. And the adjective prepared is defined by Merriam-Webster as something made in an earlier time for later use. To be ready for something, in a suitable condition for some purpose or activity, as in all systems go and with no loose lines to hold you back from action, to be willing to do something, and point, the opposite of ambivalent, which is wishy-washy, paralyzed or otherwise incapable of making a decision. Prepared is a condition of power and vitality, energetic and robust, admirable. And yet not so common. Be prepared, says the Boy Scout motto, since 1907. My pal Wikipedia says this about that. In the third part of Scouting for Boys, Robert Baden-Powell explains the meaning of the phrase. The Scout motto is, be prepared, which means you are always in a state of readiness, in mind and body, to do your duty. And they go further. They say, be prepared in mind by having disciplined yourself to be obedient to every order, and also by having thought out beforehand any accident or situation that might occur so that you know the right thing to do at the right moment and are willing to do it. Be prepared in body by making yourself strong and active and able to do the right thing at the right moment and do it. But it can get extreme. The Scouts also say, where a man has gone so far as to attempt suicide. Suicide? Really? A scout should know what to do with him. Bury him? Turn him in? Be prepared to die for your country if need be, so that when the moment arrives, you may charge home with confidence, not caring whether you're going to be killed or not. Yikes! The first handbook for girl guides, How Girls Can Be Helped to Build Up the Empire, by Agnes and Robert Baden-Powell, similarly explains. The motto of the girl guides is, be prepared. Why is this? It is because, like the other guides, you have to be prepared at any moment to face difficulties and even dangers by knowing what to do and how to do it. And on that cheery and lighthearted note, let us go to Tom Lehrer for further clarity. Oh, yes.
That is the one I've had the most requests not to. I have time for one more here. This one is a little song dedicated to the Boy Scouts of America. We seem to have a convention here tonight. The Boy Scouts of America, those noble little bastions of democracy. And the American Legion of Tomorrow. Their motto is, I would like to state at this time that I am not now and have never been. a member of the Boy Scouts of America. Their motto is, as you know, be prepared, and that is the name of the song.
Be prepared. That's the Boy Scouts' marching song. Be prepared. As through life you march along, be prepared to hold your liquor pretty well. Don't write naughty words on walls if you can't spell. Be prepared to hide that pack of cigarettes. Don't make book if you cannot cover bets. Keep those reefers hidden where you're sure that they will not be found. And be careful not to smoke them when the scoutmaster's around, for he only will insist that they be shared. Be prepared. Be prepared. That's the Boy Scout's solemn creed. Be prepared. And be clean in word and deed. Don't solicit for your sister, that's not nice, unless you get a good percentage of her price. Be prepared. And be careful not to do your good deeds when there's no one watching you. If you're looking for adventure of a new and different kind, and you come across a Girl Scout who is similarly inclined, don't be nervous, don't be flustered, don't be scared. Be prepared.
That is, of course, the incomparable Dom Lehrer. And we are talking about being prepared, but how prepared can we really be at any time? Are you prepared to defend yourself? I was mugged once in, where else? New York City, broad daylight on a Saturday afternoon with 20 witnesses who did nothing to help. Half a dozen bored teenage boys decided they wanted my rollerblades, and I looked like an easy mark. They blocked the bike path like soccer players guarding their goal, but instead of protecting their delicates, they pushed me off my feet. A couple of them fell down, too. Well, why it was easy to knock me off balance, I wondered what they expected me to do. These were the kind of rollerblades that you had to untie. Did you think I would just sit there and unlace my boots for them? And the moment that thought flashed through my head, I was leaning forward and hitting the biggest kid in the temple with my hard plastic wrist guard. I'm sure it hurt. I was leaning forward to do it again when they all jumped up and ran away over a grassy, bumpy surface where I could not give chase. I found I was elated. I had not known I would be prepared for such an attack. My adrenaline was revved up, and I found myself quite prepared to pummel an attacker into the dirt if I got the chance. I wanted the chance. I am not sure if the random self-defense classes I had taken in high school contributed. I did not yell out like they told us to do, and I did not get to use the eye-gouging thumb move they showed us. Yuck. But perhaps I retained that little nugget of information that the temple is a sensitive spot and a good place to hit. With that aggressive idea in mind, let's hear from Jeremy Irons and his gaggle of hyenas. Be prepared from The Lion King.
I never thought hyenas essential. They're crude. Unspeakably plain. But maybe they've a glimmer of potential if allied to my vision and brain. I know that your powers of retention are as wet as a warthog's backside. But thick as you are, pay attention. My words are a matter of pride. It's clear from your vacant expression the lights are not all on upstairs. But we're talking kings and successions. Even you can't be caught unawares. So prepare for the chance of a lifetime. Be prepared for sensational news. A shiny new era is tiptoeing nearer.
And where do we feature?
Just listen to teacher. I know it sounds sordid, but you'll be rewarded when at last I am given my dues. And injustice deliciously square. Be prepared.
Be prepared.
for the death of the king.
Why, is he sick?
No, fool, we're gonna kill him.
Simba, too.
Great idea! Who needs a king?
No king, no king, la 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 la.
Idiots, there will be a king.
Hey, but you said...
I will be king. Stick with me, and you'll never go hungry again. Quid pro quo, you're expected to take certain duties on board. The future is littered with prizes, and though I may have at sea, the point that I must emphasize is you won't get a sniff without me.
Meticulous planning, tenacity spanning, decades of denial is simply why I'll be king undisputed, respected, saluted, and seen for the wonder I am. Yes, my teeth and ambitions are bad. Be prepared. Yes, our teeth and ambitions are bad.
And that's Be Prepared from The Lion King, Jeremy Irons. And in case you think that's overly bombastic, I have a little example of how real life is equally as dramatic. It is worth noting that other organizations have used similar mottos to Be Prepared. The Young Pioneers say always prepared in various national languages. The Young Pioneers were created as an alternative in countries where scouting was banned, read communist countries. And the motto of the United States Coast Guard is Semper Paratus, or ever ready, not to be confused with batteries and bunnies banging on big drums. The Coast Guard reference does bring us back to the watery world of boating, however, the relevance to Lifelines. You are listening to Lifelines on KISL 88.7 FM, and I can't help but throw in a short rendition of Semper Paratus, the Coast Guard marching song as recorded by their band. It's a tie-in with the boatiness of the show, so let's give that a try. Go. The mercifully short version. And I have a very special guest today. I'm extremely excited. My friend Joe Hayes is on the line. I'm going to get him on the line and we'll see if he is still there. Joe, are you there?
I'm still here.
Yahoo! Joe is in Oakland and I have known Joe since seventh grade. I don't think I've known anybody since seventh grade except for you. And as long as I've known Joe, he's played the saxophone. And sang. What else? What other instruments you play?
Oh, I can play the nose flute.
There you go.
I can play the guitar. I can play the bass about as well as a guitar player can play the bass.
Okay. I tried playing your saxophone once and could barely get a wheeze out of it. But what makes you an amazing musician to me, beyond your skill with your chosen instruments, whether nose flute or saxophone, is your ability to collaborate. And I think you'd make a great session musician if you ever had the hankering, because you have this range and you leave your ego at the door and you just like you get into whatever you're doing. And the examples of that, I have a number of years of your the bands that you've been in that you sent me, and I think it's an I have saturated myself with your music over the last couple of days. I got to tell you, I've got nothing else in my head but Joe music.
Sounds like quite a project.
Yes. And but I want to give you a teeny little surprise, because there was something else that I had still that I don't think you remember that I maybe had.
Oh, dear.
Uh-huh. In 1986, you had a band called
Affirmative Action.
So I want to give people a taste of Affirmative Action because I still have that tape. Here's Tough Times.
Wow.
I know. This is like, I hope it's going to play. There it goes. And it's all scratchy because it was a tape. Woohoo! Era.
Yeah. Casio tone era.
Affirmative Action, Tough Times, and we've got Joe on the line. So that was the year we graduated from high school.
That's right, 86 kicks.
So how did that band come to be, and who was in that? Who's singing there?
That's Ron Allen. Ron Allen is still around. I see him from time to time on the intertubes, but I believe he's around here as well. He's a skateboarder. He's a very well-known skateboarder.
Hmm.
And he's giving skateboard classes. He's putting out videos. He's all over the intertubes and all over real life as well. He's been singing. Mark Grosbeck was sort of the creative. He and Ron were sort of the creative force behind that. Mark Grosbeck is, I think he's finishing a master's degree in Fresno. And he's got stuff online as well. He's got like instructional guitar videos online. Mark Grosbeck is the guy.
How did you get involved with them?
This band was already in existence, and Marie Cummings, a friend of mine from Davis High, mentioned to me, she was in band, and I was in band, and she said, oh yeah, I know these guys are looking for a saxophone player. You know, the music's kind of weird, but you might like it. And it wasn't weird at all. It was, as you mentioned, right at the beginning of the like revival of the ska. It's like second or maybe second and a half wave ska craze that was going on. So I was pretty familiar with the genre. And, I guess they had a flute and saxophone player who had other obligations and she couldn't do it as often, so so they let me hook my chariot to their shooting star.
Well, I kept it, and it's been traveling with me on the boat, so obviously I...
You have a cassette player on the boat. That's great.
Well, I do. It's a Walkman. And now it's digital, because I just made it digital.
Oh, nice.
Recorded for all time. Actually, it's, you know, I'm impressed, because the cassettes that I made back in the day are all deteriorating, but that one is still alive and well. So I don't know what you did, but it was the right thing. So then you moved on to the lawsuits in 1995. So a chunk of time went by there. Did you play any music in that 86 to 95 period of time?
Or 93? Yeah, actually, the lawsuit thing got started a lot earlier and ended right about in 1995
okay, so
or 96.
Okay, so I guess.
That band was around for a good 10 years. And my involvement came right as Affirmative Action was dissolving, which would have been... My freshman year in college, a bunch of friends of ours from Davis High got started with this band that eventually became known as Lawsuit. It started out just people, random collections of people playing at Mansion Cellars downtown in Davis, and going by a different name every week and switching instruments between every song.
Oh.
It was a pretty DIY operation. I think a few recordings and maybe even videos still exist of them playing as the Doughboys. But anyway,
by the time I got home
from college for winter break, they had already put together several songs. And a bunch of us who had been away came back and picked up our instruments and were invited to join in that effort. And that lasted for, like I said, about 10 years.
So, okay, I'm going to play Useless Flowers because I really like that one. Are mm-hmm. you playing on that?
You know, I don't even remember.
Well, maybe when you hear it, you'll remember. But
okay, let's refresh our memory with Useless Flowers.
And then you can tell us, like, who's singing and who wrote it and all that good stuff, if you've got that in your... see if I push pause, if it'll just go. Like, boom.
I'll make something up.
Double-breasted suit, a most conservative design. I brought you useless flowers, and all they did was die. A broken heart will not break, remains acceptable, completely gone astray. The process here is elementary, in a junior high school sort of way. Not that I'm laughing, but I'm died a thousand deaths and never had the chance to tell you all the secrets I have kept. Explain to you the humor in all the jokes you didn't get. Won't someone stop the noises in my I caught my taxi cab at 5. I shopped for monumental truth.
Do you remember that?
We do love them madly. Yeah, that's Duke Ellington there at the end. Yeah, I've been looking at the CD, which contains all manner of Byzantine hieroglyphics about who participated and was responsible for all the creative elements on that. And so I think chances are good that I did play on that.
Seems like there's a lot of horn in there somewhere,
wind
instruments.
Yeah, the horns are arranged by Jerry Sykes,
who
played also alto and flute and clarinet.
And she went to the Berklee School of Music.
She did. It's funny because she did all the arrangements, nearly all the arrangements for Lawsuit. And as you heard, some of them are pretty involved.
Yeah.
And then she took some classes at Laney. She ended up going to Berklee School of Music. And now she's a professor of arranging and composition at Berklee School of Music in Boston. But all of this she did before getting all that formal training. She just sort of picked up music theory, Mr. Brunel's class.
We have to say thank you, Mr. Brunel, because nearly all of you were trained by him.
Yeah, there's actually Mr. Brunel, Dick Brunel, the late Richard Brunel at Davis High School, and also Bob Gonzalez, who ran the jazz band, the concert band.
Right.
Pretty much all of us went through one or both of those
and
classes.
Chorus, and I was in jazz choir.
Chorus, jazz choir, madrigals, orchestra, and the music theory class that he taught.
Right, which I
huge,
taken.
Huge influence on all of us, obviously.
Yeah, and I sang with Paul, who's the lead singer there, I believe.
Yep, Paul's singing lead on that.
We were in jazz choir together.
That's right.
All right. And the Sykes, I have to say, it's a 5 kids in the family and 3 are brilliant musicians.
At least 3, yeah.
I don't know the other 2, actually. I never met the other 2.
Tom lives in Santa Barbara. I don't know about his musical exploits, but he's a fine fellow in many other regards.
But I always envy families who can sing and play together, like it's somehow there's some genetics happening. And we're getting close to the top of the hour. Do you want to do the honors?
I don't mind if I do.
Okay.
This is Joe Hayes from the Preoccupied Pipers. And when I'm in Avalon, California, and even more frequently when I'm not, I'm listening to KISL 88.7 on your FM dial.
Thank you so much. That's awesome. So I was going to play I Am a Bat. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
It's a kind of a long one, but it's bizarre. Now the last one I was expecting Tom Waits to start singing because it has that sort of and you needed some growly guy to be singing there. But I'm finding that Paul's voice is extremely addicting after a while, and there's like this like carny or cabaret type of sound to it. And one of the things I noticed of all these songs is there's some experimentation going on. It's very playful. It's like, hey, let's do blues. Hey, let's do ska. Hey, let's do, you know, whatever it is. There's no, it's like you can do anything. You guys could do anything because of the musicianship.
We thought we could. Yeah, it started out as a ska band, which, because ska is easy to play, and as you're trying to learn your instrument, that's not a bad place to start. But then, I think I credit the inexperience, but also maybe the influence of Camper Van Beethoven, because they would do all these styles that they weren't really familiar with. They'd do just like, oh, let's do some sort of Balkan piece, or let's experiment with what the something in Siberia would sound like. And they didn't really have a background in this, and so I guess maybe that emboldened us to do the same thing. And none of us had played in carnivals or anything like that, but it didn't stop us from giving it a shot.
Well, when I played this music for people, here, you can tell me yes or no if you think this is an influence. Oingo Boingo?
Oh, for sure.
Radiators?
Not that I can say, no.
Fish? Yeah.
That's funny you should say that, because Ned Sykes, who is the drummer and a large creative force behind Lawsuit, is a huge Fish head now.
Okay.
But I don't know that he was back then. That's a good question.
Talking Heads, of course. We were all mad for Talking Heads. B-52s?
That's I hadn't expected that, but I can see it, yeah.
Steve Miller?
Okay, we will admit to that.
Sublime?
Sublime, no, that's Ex Post. Like, the first I ever heard of Sublime, it was already 96 or something. And
okay. Dan over. Hicks?
I'm going to say no.
Manhattan Transfer, of course.
Yeah, again, even more of a guilty pleasure, but yes.
The Bobs,
yeah.
Of course.
We're just trying to be the Bobs with instruments.
I know. And I have to say, I do play a lot of Bobs on my show. I enjoy that immensely.
God bless you.
Whenever I can. David Bowie in the Ziggy Stardust era, perhaps?
Huh. I wouldn't have identified that, but go for it. Sure.
Now, I noticed that, speaking of the Bobs, you had, there's some reference to one of the main Bobs, Gunner.
Yeah.
He was instrumental, shall we say. How did he help put out that album, the first one?
I don't know. I'm looking at the same thing you might be looking at, which are the liner notes.
Yeah. Flimsy though they are.
I got to come clean. The reason I didn't know whether I had played on that tune is because this recording was made just as I was getting kicked out of the band.
Oh!
So, well, okay, I didn't get kicked out. I left for grad school, but it was going to be a bit of a commute. So right around the end of the summer 1992, I left, and so a lot of what followed I'm not that familiar with, but Anthony Costello, who played percussion and sang backups and arranged a lot of the backup stuff, formed partnerships with a number of luminaries, Joe Craven, Rick Lauder, and I imagine that Gunnar Madsen's participation would have come through him.
But you guys invited him to a barbecue at some point. Didn't you invite the Bobs to a barbecue? This was when I was in Germany. I was on an exchange year in 86. But didn't they show up at a barbecue?
That makes a great story, and that might have been while I was either in China or in Wisconsin. So
we should say
yes. I'm going to go say yes. The Bobs came to a barbecue, and it was great.
So we should say that I was in Germany on an exchange program, and slightly later, Joe was on an exchange program in China during the Tiananmen Square thing, right?
Right. Ugh. Yeah.
Okay. Well, beyond that, let's play I Am a Bat, because that's what we're here for. It's the music.
All right.
And maybe you can tell us more about it if you think of stuff. There you go.
I will.
that.
And I am a bat, and I want to believe that last part was you.
I'd like you to believe that, but I got to come clean and say that that's Dave Anderson on the alto.
Okay, there we go. You're on the tenor sax.
He is a fabulous player. He actually was brought in. He went to high school with the rest of us, maybe a year or two behind us. But he was in the jazz band, and they brought him in because they needed another horn player when I went to China. And then I came back, and they're like, we're not getting rid of Dave. That's Dave. I'm glad you played that, because I mentioned earlier that Jerry Sykes was the arranger on nearly everything horn-wise that we did. But that one, the horns were arranged by Stephen W. Erickson, who's also responsible for that super tasty trumpet solo right in the middle of it.
Yeah, and it's so complex. It's so layered.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And it's sort of what you mentioned before about drawing from a variety of influences. There's like big band stuff in there.
Which I love. And we didn't mention the Beatles.
Yeah, that may have crept in there. Given Casey Bowman's involvement in the lawsuit, there's no keeping the Beatles out.
Okay.
But yeah, that one that was Stephen W. Erickson on the trumpet and the arranging. He's now an assistant professor of biostatistics at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. I'm sure most of your listeners are aware.
That's very responsible sounding.
It is. But that music was most of the words and music were written by Ned, as I mentioned. Also,
oh, I didn't know that.
Creative drivers, yeah. Ned pretty much ran the band. I mean, everybody
really?
Was involved, but he was like the guy that would schedule rehearsals, make things run on time.
Wow,
he was in charge.
I thought it was Casey.
Yeah, like I said, it's difficult to draw a bright line, but. You know, Ned made things happen.
Did you all get into the studio at the same time, or did the engineers do a lot of work?
Both. I think the way we recorded it in general was pretty standard. The rhythm section would go in together. Maybe the drums would be in an isolation booth, but drums, guitar, and bass would lay down the rhythm track. Vocals would come in, do their thing later. Horns would come in. For the ensemble pieces, we were all together.
Hmm.
And, you know, sometimes those sessions went on forever.
Because there were
five horns.
In excess of 12 people there.
Yeah. So, I mean, to make sure that you get a decent take, we've got to compartmentalize it a little bit. But all the solos are done you can do as many takes as you like, which, depending on the personality, meant that it could take forever as well.
Of course, and that is the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
Who was writing the lyrics?
A lot of the lyrics are written by Paul. Those lyrics, as I mentioned, are mostly by Ned. Paul and Ish and Casey.
Ish is Mike Ishizui.
I'm sorry, yeah, Michael Ishizui, also of Davis High School. Yeah, looking through, again, these bizarre symbols that indicate who did what, it looks like it's mostly Paul, Ned, Casey, and Ish.
Okay. Okay, well, here's a lot of words. Entropy, it's a little shorter, but it's got a lot of words. Okay, we're going to listen to this, and then we'll go on to the Preoccupied Pipers.
All right.
So stay tuned, people. Listen to this. Entropy by Lawsuits. Entropy by the Lawsuit, or just Lawsuit. Joe, you still there? Oh, sorry. I didn't push your button. You're still there, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, it's so complex. It's rather sophisticated music. I mean, it's kind of amazing it came out of, pre-college, I don't know. I'm just impressed, okay?
Yeah, me too. But like I said, you know, everybody contributed, but a lot of people contributed more. And, you know, Jerry Sykes in particular, a lot of us would just put our horns together and show up and then, you know, try to help load out when the thing was over. But, yeah, she was up.
That's a lot,
nights
though.
After nights putting those arrangements together.
You've been in other bands since, and it's, I don't know how many bands you've tried and failed at, but Usually it's really hard to find a band where you are all cooperative, you all want to rehearse the same amount, you all have the same aspirations, you agree on what kind of music or who's going to do what. I mean, there's so many different pieces to agree on that hats off to Jerry. I didn't realize she was so key, but now I'm...
Oh, yeah. No, musically, she's definitely... And then, you know, organizationally, like I said, Ned really took the lead in a lot of stuff. And Anthony took... I mean, he was doing a lot of the business end of things.
Brilliant.
Which, you know, is not necessarily the most glamorous part of it, but he's got a real knack for it, and he put in a ton of hours. So, like I said, some of us just kind of showed up and played our parts. But those folks, you know, Jerry, Ned, Anthony, Casey, really made it happen.
Cool. So now that we move ahead to Preoccupied Pipers, which...
Let's do it.
I've got Kill the Rabbit. What do you want to tell us about that?
Kill the Rabbit, off of the Volume 3, Number 1?
Yes. Is there a Volume 1, 2, and...
Yeah, there are. Well, so Preoccupied Pipers is this... it's a cooperative audio magazine.
Okay.
And the first few volumes and or first few issues came out on cassette. And if I can get a hold of them, maybe you can play them on the boat. But
or on the radio.
This was summer of 1995. The way it works is that people show up at Casey's house and they record something that has been running through their head, or they help Casey record something that's been running through his head. And after there's an album's worth of material, he mixes it all down and masters it and puts out an album.
Sweet. Is there a website you can tell us about where people could go and hear more?
There is. In fact, people are lucky because Casey has decided that he's going to take all the stuff that that we've put out so far, I think maybe excluding the early cassettes, which have not been digitized, and maybe he should talk to you about that.
Easy.
But he's going to put them up on Bandcamp, and a lot of them are already there. And it's just preoccupiedpipers.bandcamp.com.
Cool. And this, one friend I play this for said this would be ideal road music, road trip music, because it's so layered that you hear something new every time you hear it, and by the end of your road trip, you'd be completely enthralled.
Is right. This has been tested. And
tested on the road.
That's right. Yeah, I don't know much about Kill the Rabbit, except that it's obviously about television. This appears to have been one of Casey's solo things. He peppers the Preoccupied Pipers output with stuff that he's just done on his own and that nobody's heard before. And I think this is one of those examples.
So you say that it's rabbit, like the rabbit ears on the top of the set?
Oh, yeah, I hadn't even made that connection.
But see, I thought it was like a pregnancy test. We're going to have to listen to the words.
Wow, it's a Rorschach song.
Okay. Well, let's hear it. Pipers. Preoccupied Pipers. Kill the Rabbit. Go.
Yeah.
think we may have lost Joe. Let's see if it's a hum.
If you'd like to make a call, please.
Okay, Joe will have to call back, I think, if he'd like to continue talking to us. That was Kill the Rabbit, Preoccupied Pipers. And I think it's pretty fun. Oh, there, he's calling back. All right. So I'm going to go into a next song called Hot Showers while we're getting him back on the line. Or maybe we'll just do this. Hello, are you there?
Still here.
Oh, good. So Kill the Rabbit. Who's singing there?
Yeah, that's Marta Sykes Wilson. Marta Wilson Sykes.
I thought so.
Marta, heretofore known as Wilson, now Marta Sykes. Yeah, I forgot that she was singing on that, which is ridiculous because it's such a great performance. And
yeah.
Clearly Jerry was involved as well because there's both clarinet and other horns on there. So it was more of a collaborative effort than I'd recalled.
And the man singing, is that Casey?
That's Casey.
Okay. Well, see, there you go. We've all sort of evolved. Our voices have grown up a bit, I think. My friend who listened to this said that he really liked her voice, that she had that fresh California sound. So
it's funny because when I first heard it, I didn't get a copy of this until I had left for Bolivia. And so I hadn't heard a lot of this stuff, and I couldn't figure out who was singing. Because, you know, Marta's been singing for a long time, and I'm familiar with her voice because she sang in madrigals and choir and, you know, of course, in Lawsuit as well. But it didn't sound like her at all. And I finally asked her about it when I got back, and she said, yeah, she had taken some voice lessons or something and had been suggested to try some new technique, and that was the first time she had done it. So it sounds completely different from anything she had done prior to that.
Yeah. Huh.
So, good stuff.
Do you know, it occurred to me as I was listening to that in seventh grade we used to sit around and listen to music. So we're doing that again. Of course, it's your music.
Yeah.
But old habits die hard. Okay, so I've got lined up Hot Showers because you requested that. Now, why did you say that Hot Showers was one of your faves?
It's got a little bit of everything. This one, it's written and sung by Barbara West. And a horn arrangement by Jerry, of course. And then it's just got this, it's got a little bit of everything. There's got this, like, spoken word / bass solo part of it. And it's all about, well, I mean, you don't need me to tell you what it's all about. Listen to the lyrics and enjoy it for yourself. But it's just, I think it encapsulates a little bit of the whole Lawsuit / Preoccupied Pipers ethos, and that it draws in a whole bunch of different things, and it doesn't fit into any category, and it's fun to listen to.
Well, and one of the things I should say we have all been interested in from the get-go is things like sustainability and social responsibility, and you know, that is one thing that we all cared very much about and still do. So this speaks a little bit to that, and I had no idea Barbara wrote it, but so let's listen to Hot Showers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hot Showers. But when a long chill has sunk into the bone, when a new morning shakes you from a shattered dream, when you can't imagine how to move, nothing gets the blood moving, nothing sets the bones moving, nothing loosens me, smooths me, chains me, soothes me, opens me like a hot shower, long hot shower.
There you go. That is Hot Showers by Occupied Pipers, Barbara West.
Yeah, I like the point you made about it being about sustainability and all that, but I never really thought about that because it's the least preachy song about sustainability that you could imagine. Because it's all about how, oh, it's so good to take a long hot shower.
And that's, as far as Avalon is concerned and living on a boat, that is something that is important to us. And, you know, Barbara probably didn't know this. I'm sure she didn't. But here on the island, we have this public shower place where you get a five-minute shower for $3.
Oof.
And it's not that fun of an experience, I have to say. And they also have this joke about people who are boaters, you know, that the islanders are not supposed to date boaters because all they want is your hot shower and your refrigerator. Which is only partly true. And I
good
remember sitting around with Barbara West and Jen, her sister, and listening to Holly Near and lots of music in that friendship there.
That's right. Many were the hours spent over at their house soaking in that stuff.
Another thing, places. So then we have a complete change of sound with Cold Duck Noir. Does that ring any bells?
Yeah. I'm glad you're playing this because I believe that this is another example of a horn arrangement that wasn't put together by Jerry Sykes. I think the aforementioned alto saxophonist Dave Anderson is responsible for this one.
Well, it's whereas the last one was kind of poppy sounding and maybe a little, I don't know, white girl rap, this is more funk.
Yeah. I remember Dave disappearing for a while and then coming back with
gotten funky.
what had become the skeleton of Cold Duck Noir.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't remember much else about it except that it was his brainchild.
All right, we'll play.
And if I'm completely mistaken about this, then so what?
So what? All right, we'll play it and see how this goes.
How long to talk to you?
Sounds funky to me.
Yeah.
Itching the cells in my brain, there is a place where you'll remember my name when things are rough. I clear my head, I go walk when times are tough. All just because I can't talk, I can't talk, I can't talk. And I feel like a fish out of water. Oh, it's been that metaphors that have never been my thing. And I feel down the soul broken hearted. The pain I've lost from something never even gained. But with Fabergé cologne, my artistic tuxedo as a hot pink I'm a bun. I'm resplendent on the dance floor, but yet I'm all alone. We came here as a twosome, but I'm leaving as exactly one. Of the helm, we're going to sing. A lifeboat's running around. Need a drink because I noticed that you've been crowned prom queen.
Oh, time to perform and pass it on your lipstick.
The captain of the football team is watching you. So when you're through playing Bobby Doll and Nancy, I still have one or two things left to say to you. The first of which is,
I want to talk to you.
Yeah.
Right away. I'll take this opportunity to tell you the opportunity to see that ain't yet begun. So quit with this malarkey, don't forget I got your car keys in my
hand. Even as exactly what?
Yeah. That's Cold Duck Noir.
Yeah, that's Marta Sykes again singing on that. And I'm glad how you brought up earlier about how it's difficult with to fit all the egos into a band sometimes. And that is something that has not ever been an issue, especially with Marta. I mean, we heard her sing on Kill the Rabbit, and we heard her sing on this. And like even in those two examples, it's clear that she's got a real range of styles. And but the thing is, when she was in Lawsuit, she was the trombone player. Like, she was part of the horn section. And you just didn't have the attitude and the ego that you'd expect out of somebody with as much vocal talent as she's got. And so now, you know, with Preoccupied Piper, she's done more vocals. And she's done, I think she's done, like, professional voice work as well. Accents and singing and stuff like that. But you'd never know it talking to her, because she just doesn't put herself out there as being the one in the room that you need to pay attention to. She's just got that in reserve. It's great.
I wonder if that's also a function of having known everybody in the band since junior high or earlier.
That's true. Yeah. It's less of a band than it is a bunch of people who've known each other for a long time and are good friends first and then like to screw around and make music second.
Yeah, because I have a theory that as we grow up, we have this shield in front of us, which is our grown-up shield, but that people who knew you when you were a kid see past that because they can see the person behind you or the person that you were, whereas someone else who met you later might not see past that, or it takes longer. So you kind of cut through that nonsense right away.
Yeah, no, that fits.
That's nice. I have up here Pop Glass Ceiling. Another sound, which is completely different. To show the range.
It shows the range. I'm afraid I can't say much about it.
Okay.
Because it appeared on a cassette that somebody mailed me in South Central Bolivia in late 1995. So I enjoy it, but I can't tell you much about it.
Right. But so you were a world traveler as well. We were both wandering about the planet while friends were making music and... This is good. This is all good. We'll refresh our memory here. It's a couple minutes long, so we'll try this.
Yeah, spin it.
Pop Glass Ceiling.
Slided hand. It's for her only purpose is to supplement the pupil's own demands. But the comfort of a snow day wears thin. The tenets of a rattled cage win. cover it psyche activates the paramedic id. But the ego rushes forward to the cockpit to negotiate the grin. And instead of a spectacular crash, the pilot with no hopes left to dash twice and pulls the plane out from its dialectic spin. To unprecedented heights it will ascend. To fracture the pop glass ceiling, a summit's crest is relative to the nearest valley floor. If pain is the uppermost feeling, consider that a harbinger of blissful days in store.
Pop glass ceiling.
It's lovely.
It's lovely. Totally different sound. Little elements of other things in there, little harmonies. Great.
Yeah, no, each of these collections is like that. Like I said, the way that these albums are constructed, it involves people just dropping by, and you know, even if it's the same people, they can have different ideas, but a lot of times it's completely different people, and by the time it's assembled, I think Casey does a nice job of sequencing it so that you're getting something completely different from track to track.
And there's an evolution. It feels like there's an evolution there.
Definitely.
And that was the 1995 Preoccupied Pipers, and we're going to switch into the 2003 version now. So some time has gone by, and I've got Cover Letter. Do you remember anything about Cover Letter?
Yeah, this was something that Casey sent out a demo to a record company. I think Not Lame, maybe?
Not Lame.
Or maybe that's a distributor. I don't know. I'm the
wrong
person
to do an
interview.
No, that's in the song. Not Lame is in the song.
Yeah, no, it is, Not Lame is definitely one of the companies involved. But anyway, he was instructed to send out a demo and a cover letter. And then instead what he did is he sent out a demo with the song Cover Letter as the first song. So this is his pitch to the record company mogul, basically.
And did he ever hear anything?
I don't know, because I think Not Lame ended up distributing some of his stuff, or if it didn't, they're fools. but I don't know if it had its intended effect.
Uh-huh. Well, there is some reading that happens on this. It seems like there's a couple of tracks that seem like they're straight out of some text rather than being intended as being lyrics. So I'm pleased to hear that this is another reading. Okay.
Yes, it's a dramatic reading of a likely unsuccessful cover letter to a record company executive.
Okay, here's what it sounds like.
Mr. Cole, this is my cover letter. Send it to you. Send it to Not Lame. Copy to Bruce. I hope you find the content interesting. I hope to make the label proud. Mr. Cole, this is my bio. A crackpot genius, unconventional. Quite humble. I hope to be the darling of your
like to think that that was a successful cover letter.
I can't say that that it did all that it should have been able to do.
They probably saw that there was no paper attached and said, this guy didn't follow directions.
Exactly, yeah. It's probably some graph paper-brained accountants instead of music fans running that place.
Yeah. I did something similar once to an illustration place where I actually created a document that looked a lot like one of their brochures, but it was all my cover letter and information about how they should hire me, and they pretty much ignored me completely.
That'll learn you to be creative when applying
no,
creativity jobs.
I don't think they wanted you to be creative, though. I think it was one of those things where they told you what to do and you did it. So it's just as well.
One of those jobs.
Now I've got a flirt boy, which I think is extremely funny. Do you know who was singing on this one?
This is Paul Sykes.
This is Paul. Did he write this too?
He wrote this. I have the sense, again, this was produced largely in my absence, but I have the sense that this was born of an internecine rivalry with somebody else in the band who was perceived to be having a little more success with the ladies than Paul himself was.
Not a brother, perhaps.
No. No. I'm not certain about that, but I got that sense. So, listen for that vibe.
I wouldn't have caught that, but now I will. All right, this is Flirt Boy. It's quite cute.
Never lie, but that was a long, long
That's Paul Sykes singing Flirt Boy.
Yeah, that was Paul Sykes fronting the band Broken Thing. After Lawsuit broke up, there was a smaller, pared-down, more rock and roll-focused spin-off act called Broken Thing that involved Paul, Mike Ishizui, Steve and W. Erickson, mentioned before, and Dave Anderson, and then also a mysterious drummer named Jimmy, whose real identity shall remain a secret, although it was the same drummer as in Lawsuit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then they played just shows around the Bay Area.
I was going to ask you about that. I mean, that was extremely Beatlesque right there. So did... did any of these bands play regularly? The Lawsuit or Preoccupied Pipers, did you ever play out? I mean, you've got a tour, somebody given credit for being the tour manager, but, you know, that tongue-in-cheek, I know the sense of humor you people have.
Oh, yeah, no, Lawsuit played all the time. Lawsuit was playing, I mean, started out in Davis, obviously, but ended up playing a lot in the Bay Area, played at Larry Blake's, played pretty regularly at Hotel Utah in San Francisco. And we played some festivals, played the Whole Earth Festival in Davis, obviously. And those, I mean, those were some of the biggest crowds that we ever got. And yeah, so Lawsuit was a pretty busy band in terms of playing live shows, and Broken Thing was as well. They weren't even so much into recording as Lawsuit was. Broken Thing kind of just played small venues and kept it moving. Preoccupied Pipers, on the other hand, is completely opposite. It is almost exclusively a studio thing, not because of everybody's Steely Dan-like perfectionism in terms of the audio quality, but rather because everybody's in their mid-40s and has kids.
Right.
But we do play one show a year at the International Pop Overthrow Festival. It's a little power pop showcase of a festival, and it happens for a few days at a time in different places all over the world. There's one in Los Angeles, there's one in Chicago, there's one in Liverpool, there's one, lately there's one in San Francisco, which is the one that we play because it's right here.
Yeah.
And it's just internationalpopoverthrow.com if you're checking out when it's coming to your town. And it's like a festival for people with ADHD, because every band goes on for like 22 minutes. And so if you don't like the band that's on, then go out and have a cigarette and come back and you listen to the next band. Not that we're condoning smoking.
No, of course not.
So it's great. So that's the only thing we do in terms of live shows.
And do you rehearse for this?
Just barely. Typically, we take the day off because it's normally like on a Wednesday evening or something. So we'll take the day off and go over to Casey's house, which doubles as Timber Trout Studios.
Ah.
And that's where all this stuff is recorded.
And he's in Oakland as well?
And so we go there and spend the day and relearn these songs that we recorded maybe 4 or 5 years ago, or like make up new ones on the spot. And then we go and play a show.
And we should say that Timber Trout Studios is in all kinds of places, apparently. Oakland, Sacramento,
right.
And Jamaica at Plains, Massachusetts.
Jamaica Plains, Massachusetts. There's one in Tokyo as well. Actually, it's not in Tokyo anymore. Ish used to live in Tokyo. Now I think he's in either Hong Kong or Singapore. So sometimes Casey will mail him a file and say, okay, I need a guitar part for this. And he'll mail it back with the guitar part inserted.
Yes.
And that's how Jerry works in Boston as well. She'll put things together and just slap them onto a file that Casey sent her. So that's right. Yeah, Timber Trout Studios is all over the place.
And there's a website for Timber Trout at timbertrout.com if you're curious about what other fun stuff he's put together. Good. The next track I have, I'm feeling like maybe you did the vocals too, but you could tell me I'm wrong. Did you sing for One Eyed Jax?
Yeah.
Okay. Talk about wordy. Now, I have to say that one of the hallmarks of our theatrical group in high school was we like words. We like big words. We like convoluted conversations. And I'm now that I'm out in the big world, it's harder and harder to find people who enjoy that sort of nonsense and banter. So I would say that this is a very... see, I can't even speak English anymore. I'd say it was speaks to that time period when there was a lot of wordage, a lot of verbiage happening.
Yeah. Well, it's true. I mean, I think you took me into this, actually. It was the improv theater group run by David Burmester.
Mm-hmm. You had to make stuff up on
the Acme Theater Company, right, run by David Burmester.
Yep.
Yeah, there's some loquacious tendencies that...
loquacious tendencies, Heath.
Drew out of that.
Who wrote One Eyed Jacks, the lyrics?
I wrote One Eyed Jacks. The chorus comes from a song that my mom told me about that she and her college roommate used to sing for some reason. And you've got to kind of screw up your mouth and your eyes as if you're admonishing a child in order to sing it. And it's still not clear what it means or why anybody sang it. But I needed a chorus for this song that I'd written, so I just slapped that right in there.
And what is the chorus?
One-eyed jacks are diddly, even when they smile. So don't trust a one-eyed jack, or you are bound to dial.
Okay.
As much about it as I do now.
I'll have to think about that. Okay, here's one-eyed jacks with the preoccupied pipers.
Time when we were driving and I almost missed the turn off from I-80. We were coming home, seeing a movie, what's the name, the one with Gregory Peck. And you decided you'd try to light a cigarette, although the window was down, so when I swerve, you reach across the seat and burn me with the end of it, and I still got that scar on my neck. As I recall, it was a Tuesday night, you and me wore our dresses tight. You took forever to get ready, read me all you had by Ferlinghetti. What was he thinking? I think he was right. A time we all went up the falls. Those guys just thought that thing I didn't want to. It was 20 feet tall and about a yard of land in my book. That's not nearly enough. So what was up with your friend who wanted water and she didn't want to carry it, cause it wasn't the kind that she likes. If that's not rude, then tell me, maybe she's just badly brought up. And how can you be so pleased to see me when you like coffee? I want tea, but we'll just settle for a half Americano with some almonds in it. Oh, I'm not kidding. Saturdays to play, lock the windows and the doors on some incredibly hot summer days. We buy refreshments, but there's only so much Coke you can drink. And after 3 or 4 hours of playing badly, I was convinced it'd been a mistake to come and see me so disappointed. But in retrospect, it was worthwhile time for all of us, at least that's what I think.
That would be One-Eyed Jacks.
One-Eyed Jacks.
Preoccupied Pipers. And you are listening to KASL Avalon 88.7 FM. And this is the Lifelines program with special guest Joe Hayes, musician extraordinaire and friend from junior high. That's a good thing. It's a very good thing. By the way, I have to tell you that if you guys want to come to Avalon, you mentioned before that when you're in Avalon, you do listen to KISL. And
every time.
You know, perhaps some of your number could come and play here. We have lots of bands in the summer. Your ferry trip is free on your birthday.
Is that right?
We may have missed that.
it's got to be somebody's birthday with the band this large.
Isn't it in January, your birthday?
Mine? Yeah. It just went by.
Which was what?
The 14th.
Oh, dear. Well, I'm going to have to yodel you. Ready? Okay. Ready?
Uh-huh.
This is a belated birthday yodel. On this day we wish for you, yodel-a-dee-dee-ya, yodel-a-dee-do. Your birthday dreams may all come true, yodel-a-dee-dee-ya-yo. Oh, wee-ya, yodel-a-dee-do, yodel-a-dee-dee-ya, yodel-a-dee-do. Wee-ya, yodel-a-dee-do, yodel-a-dee-dee-ya-yo. Happy birthday. Belated.
Wow. I that's the first birthday yodeling I've ever had.
Yeah, I know. Usually
is
I
that
don't...
you? Is that you live?
Yeah.
I didn't know this was in your quiver of tricks.
I was a singing hostess at a German restaurant in Portland, Oregon.
Well, of course you were.
We learned that one.
That's lovely. Nicely done.
The last time I sang it on the air was for the 100th anniversary of the town of Avalon, which was just this past summer.
Oh.
So, yeah, we just had our 100th birthday here.
So we missed an important one, too.
Right, but you know, any time you want to come over, I'm sure we can arrange something. We have a big stage right in front of the water, and you guys could set up, and it could be, and you could do the Los Angeles version of the poppy thing, and then come over here and do some more than 20 minutes for us.
Two shows in 1 year?
I know. Pitch it to them. I mean, you'll have already been rehearsed and stuff over at the other show,
that's
right?
That's right. Yeah, we'll do the L.A. show first.
Yeah.
I'm going to lobby really hard for that at the next planning meeting.
Avalon's big fun. We could probably get a deal for you.
Especially right? I don't doubt it. That sounds great.
If you're all willing to cram into the same room. Okay. I got one more here from the Preoccupied Pipers called Big Brown Planet. Say that five times fast. Does that bring any memories to...
Yeah, that was... See, sometimes Casey sits down and writes a song really carefully and sends it to Jerry, and she puts a lot of thought into a horn arrangement, and then sheet music is drawn up, and we all play our parts and get it right. And then sometimes we've had a few too many Rainier ales, and we stumble into Tumber Trout, and something like Big Brown Planet comes out.
It's a contrast.
It's a little sloppy. It's a little loose, but, it's a good time.
Okay. Well, and it's we'll play that. Come right back. Big Brown Planet, Lost Six.
Down. Hey, you got to move around. Hey, you got to move around.
Big Brown Planet, and it does go on a little bit more, but I managed to cut it off.
Yeah, I think it's less than enough for our USRDA requirement.
That's right. And obviously, Casey likes to mention current events. He talked about the Gilda Radner in one of the previous ones, and the wall coming down. I'm assuming he meant the Berlin Wall, and he's talking about Jerry Brown.
That's right. That was when Jerry Brown and Willie Brown were mayor at the same time.
That's great.
It's a topical tune. That's an example of what Casey likes to refer to as butt rock, which is pretty much the meat and potatoes of Timber Trout Studios. But, you know, I was wrong about the whole arrangement thing. I mean, we did sort of slap that together, but then you could hear there Jerry's influence. She put together a little Tears of a Clown.
Yes, I heard that little flute thing.
A little piccolo thing, yeah. Because the whole album, this album is jokes about the medical profession, and it's got kind of a clown theme. So I think she was cleaving onto that.
Cleaving, that's a good word for medical profession.
Yeah.
So that was 2003. Then some time went by for you.
Right.
Okay, so then we get to Bossa 5-0. Well, how did that happen?
Oh, right. So 2003, that was actually about the same time that Bossa 5-0 started up.
You're a serial monogamist with bands.
I am. Actually, I was cheating on Bossa 5-0 for more recent years.
Uh-oh.
But, you know, it didn't mean anything to me.
And you have no proof.
Right. So what happened? Oh, this goes back to actually the frozen tundra of Wisconsin. I was in a class called the Black Music Ensemble, and black, I think, modifies music rather than ensemble in the case of this class at the University of Wisconsin. A guy named Richard Davis, legendary bass player, has played with everyone, you know, John Coltrane, Eric Dolphy, Sarah Vaughan, all those folks, but is leader of his own group in New York and has an estimable legacy in his own right, decided to settle down in Madison, Wisconsin to raise his daughter, and he taught two classes a year, one of which was this black music ensemble, which was just basically a supervised combo. You know, he'd lead us through picking a selection and kind of stretching ourselves out and doing it in different ways, and just learned a ton from him. Anyway, there was an oboe performance major named Christina Bogiagis, who I met through that, and she at one point approached me and said, I'm thinking about doing some bossa nova, and I've got a guitar player, and so let's get together. And we played a couple of shows before we ended up graduating and leaving, and I thought I'd never see her again. And I ran into her at a Marisa Monchi concert at Zellerbach Hall on the UC Berkeley campus. And we got back in touch, and she called me up again and said, hey, I've got another guitarist. Let's keep this going. And the guitarist was one Rob Riddell, and he's a fabulous guitarist. And we got a flute player named Sonia Kaldvet. And for a while, it was kind of a Spinal Tap-esque revolving drummer chair.
Mm-hmm.
But we eventually were fortunate enough to secure the services of Michelle Gerlitz, who is a fabulous, fabulous percussionist. Bossa 5-0 is the name of that group. And it started out just being, you know, the standard bossa nova, you know, Don Jobin and the Juan Gilberto type recordings. And then as the band progressed, we moved further on into some more contemporary pop samba stuff.
Okay, well, let's hear a sample of it, and then we'll have a little more time to talk about. So what year are we talking, this Bossa 5-0? CD you
started in 2003, I believe. I believe we played our first gig on the night that the gubernatorial recall came through, and
oh, great.
Arnold Schwarzenegger was selected as our next governor. So right. I think that was 2003.
Okay. Well, here's Bossa 5-0 with Triste.
Triste viver na solidão. Ou sonhador tem que acordar.
chão. Triste saber que ninguém pode viver de ilusão, que nunca vai ser, nunca vai dar. O sonhador tem que acordar. Tua beleza é um avião.
Tuesday by Bossa 5-0, and Joe, what do you get to say about that?
Oh, I hadn't listened to that in a long time, and I'm so glad that we were able to, as I mentioned, secure the services of Ms. Michelle Gerlitz. She's responsible for that crying squeak guy.
Oh, right.
She's just the best. Like I said, a lot of these are just straight-up Bossa Nova recordings that became popular in the 50s and 60s, and as reimagined by your local Bossa 5-0. Earlier in our career, we were a lot more, how shall we say, ambitious about putting together our own arrangements. And then later on, we just kind of transcribed them right off the record. So I think that might have been an example of the latter.
But it came out very well. And
It did.
I had the opportunity to actually see you live. Remember?
Oh, that's right, at the Dolores Cafe.
Right, because when our paths crossed in San Francisco, and I was just really overwhelmed by the peacefulness of your group. I guess all of my experiences with bands have been rivaling egos and, you know, no, we're going to play it this way. No, I don't want to play that song. No, it's not in my key. And and you guys just, like, all got along so well.
Yeah, no, I feel like I've been lucky because... for the most part, I've played with people who are my friends to begin with, you know, Lawsuit and Private Pipers, obviously. But this band was different, and it was people that we didn't necessarily know getting together, and it just worked out so beautifully. To illustrate that, Christina has since moved to Brazil, and she was back recently, and we decided to get together, all five of us. And we got together, and we had a great time, and then we decided to get together again while she was still here. And at no time did we play any music. And people talked about it, and Rob and I in particular were kind of reluctant because we've all forgotten everything that we used to play because we're doing other stuff. But it was just great. Like, the point was to get together with these people that have become such good friends of ours. And it really wasn't the music that tied that together as much as it was just the personalities. And so, yeah, been lucky.
Very admirable.
Trod that ego-strewn path.
Excellent.
I'm happy to say.
And what's next for you musically?
Oh, my son is interested in taking piano lessons, so we might transition into that.
A family band.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to craft out his future too in too broad of set of lines just yet.
You could tease him into performance.
That's right. I'll try to goad him into accompanying me.
On that album, can you pick a last one for us?
Ah.
tapping on your teeth?
Yes, I am. We could listen to Ole Alzinho, although I wanted to mention something about Xangô.
Okay.
Because it would be a fitting compliment to your theme of being prepared.
Yeah?
Because if Xangô is a piece by Baden Powell, who's a phenomenal Brazilian guitarist. No longer with us, I'm afraid, but put together some amazing arrangements of other people's stuff, but his own compositions as well. And he was named after, as you mentioned at the beginning of your set, the founder of the Boy Scouts.
Oh, that's funny.
Except his name is just Baden Powell. It's not Robert Baden Powell.
Okay.
Anyway, could play that,
cool.
Or you could play Oleãozinho, which is kind of a little lullaby to send your listeners off into dreamland.
I think we're going to go, say Xangô?
Xangô.
Okay.
Yep.
Do we know what Xangô means?
I believe it's one of the Orishas. The Orishas are this melange of African nativist deities or spirits, and then the Catholic saints. So the slaves in Brazil had to disguise their religion, and so they sort of transmogrified the identities of these their native religions, deities, onto the saints in Catholicism. So every deity has its sort of counterpart in the saints, in either Santeria in Cuba or in Candomblé, which is the religion in Brazil. And so Xangô is one of those, and I'm sorry to say I do not recall what Xangô is in charge of.
All right, well, we'll give it a try. Maybe I'll figure it out before the song's over.
All right.
Thank you.
That was great.
Was great.
Shingo.
Yeah, that's a great tune.
I looked it up. He's the god of justice and thunder and lightning.
All of those things?
Yeah.
The heavy schedule.
Yeah. It's kind of Zeus-like, though, don't you think?
Yeah, especially the lightning.
Well, also the justice, because he was like, he was in charge of, he's the last word.
Right.
But
right.
Also there's a capoeira connection there, which, you know, considering your sister's involvement in capoeira.
That's right, and she's actually responsible for getting me into Brazilian music as
excellent.
Much as I was.
I'm loving it.
I mean, the,
go Siobhan.
yeah, she sent me a ton of music when I was in Wisconsin and she was in Brazil, and a lot of that is what we incorporated into Bossa 5-0's repertoire.
Nice. Again, the family connection. I love it. Hey, Joe, it's been really, really wonderful having you talk to me, and you hung out there the whole 2 hours, which I'm amazed at. You kind of co-hosted this show.
My pleasure.
From the distance.
You're doing a great job. Thanks
Thank
for having
you.
Me on.
Thank you, and I do hope you guys will come to Avalon because it's a beautiful place.
I'm looking at the email machine, and there's already talk of how we can make this happen. So
excellent.
let's continue those conversations.
You've been listening to Lifelines here in Avalon,
go out on the ocean.
KISL,
if I had a pony,
88.7
I'd
FM.
On my boat, and we could all together go out on the ocean, set me up on my pony, on my boat.
Hope to see you next week, Monday at 11:30, for more news about living on a boat, living in Avalon, and special guests. Fair winds on the airwaves, y'all.
Will it just be me and Trevor? We go riding through them movies, and we buy a boat, and on the sea we sail.
This is Seashell's Mom, and you are listening to KISL Avalon on 88.7 FM Island Radio.
Become a member of the KISL family. It's easy to join, and it comes with many island discounts and freebies. You can sign up using a credit card or PayPal on our website, kislavalon.com. Want to host your own show on Island Radio? Beginning DJ classes are held here at the Greenhouse in Avalon City Park. Call 424-226-2837 for details. If I did it, so can you.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.